Today's episode is brought to you by USTA New England. Join USTA New England in their summer campaign to get more players out on the court for their hashtag #IAmATennisPlayer initiative. Visit www.playtennisnewengland.com for more information or listen out for an overview midway through the show today. Now turn up the volume because it's time for another fantastic WTA superstar.
Please take your seats quickly, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
I mean, they always have a big mouth. They always talk a lot. So it happened before, it's going to happen again.
This week's fan guest is from Nitra, Slovakia. So of course it makes perfect sense why he's such a big fan of today's guest. Now working as a sports commentator for TV Nova in Prague, Czech Republic, he covers his country's favorite sports, ice hockey, tennis, and even the Olympics. And he lists our guest's magical run to the 2016 WTA Championship title as his favorite fan moment. Please welcome Matuš Mazec. Matuš, vitajte. Good. Did I say that right? Was I good? Yes.
Vitajte, yes.
You said much better. We're going to have fun today, for sure. You did mention that historic run in Singapore to me, Matuš, in 2016. As a member of the Slovak sports media, I wondered, what was the reaction in Slovakia after Domi's big win that year?
It was really great. It has started already in the preliminary group, last match it was. We were all proud. You know, in Slovakia, it's like that everyone is the winner when we are winning, and when you are losing, then it's only her fault. But,
only you are losing, right?
Yes, it's only your fault if you are losing. But that time, everyone was so proud of it.
Well, we are very proud. I know the country is proud. Let's get to talk about it in a minute. Let's bring out our very special guest. Our player guest today is one that truly defied all the odds. As a young girl growing up in Slovakia, she was told time and time again that her small frame would never allow her to be among the world's best. But the world's best is what she would quickly become. Just a few short years after turning professional in 2004, she'd make her very first Grand Slam semifinal by defeating Maria Sharapova at the 2009 French Open. She would go on to capture 8 career WTA singles titles. And in 2014, she'd become the first woman from her country to advance to a Grand Slam final at the Australian Open. Known for her quick and aggressive style of play, she would continue to skyrocket up the WTA rankings and ultimately achieve a career high of number 4 in the world. Her most remarkable year on tour was undoubtedly her 2016 season, where she not only married the love of her life, but she would also palme herself into 7 WTA tournament finals, winning 4, including the prestigious Eastbourne event, as well as the biggest title of her career, the 2016 WTA Championships in Singapore. Today, she can add fashion designer, author, nightclub owner, and now mom to her list of job titles after tennis. And she's here today to discuss her amazing career and maybe give you some pointers on how to take an amazing elevator selfie. Our guest today is the fantastic Dominika Cibulková. Domi, hello.
Hi, everybody.
Thank you so much for being here. I think you're busier now than you ever have been, even when you were traveling, right?
Yes. It's actually really, really busy. When you're a tennis player, you're like, okay, this is the hardest you can do. And then you become a mom and it's like, okay, I think it wasn't the hardest that you could do. So yeah. But it's you know, different lifestyle and I'm just enjoying it. So it's great.
You can't see this, everyone, but Domi is like basking in her beautiful apartment, just glamored up right now. So we're going to have so much fun today. But before we begin, we had a ton of questions for you, Domi, about your family. Everyone wanted to send you good vibes. They want to know how your new baby son is. How's Michael? How's Bratislava been this past year?
Okay. You know, I think for everybody it was pretty hard, this situation that happened, but it's slowly getting to normal. And past couple of weeks, you know, our city started to openings. Life is getting to good old days, hopefully. And, you know, it's we're planning our summer vacations. And actually, I'm working on my body to get in shape. So that's something what I'm really focusing on right now, because I wasn't one of those mothers who just, you know, got rid of the kilos really quickly. So I had to really work hard for it. as for everything in my life. So yes, and life is great. You know, we are enjoying Jakub with Mike, you know, and we are actually, I'm not like only me taking care of Jakub full time. Also my husband is. So it's, he's helping me a lot. He's a great husband. So we are actually really enjoying this, this time right now in our lives. And everybody's asking me like, are you coming back? Are you coming back? I'm like, no, not yet.
But have you heard that she told that not yet? So she's planning to come back.
No, actually, I miss tennis. I miss the matches. I miss the winning feeling. But certainly I don't miss all the hard work I had to put in, you know. So I still remember everything. I didn't forget that. So it's still not on my mind that, okay, I would like to do this again, you know, and it's very tricky.
Everyone's playing so much longer now. We can thank Kim and Serena and Venus for playing until 40. So this is great. You have plenty of time. Just sit, relax, enjoy, enjoy. We'll see you in a couple of years. That's fine. All right, guys, before we jump into Dominika's amazing career, I'd like to start the pod with my favorite way to start any service game.
15 love.
And that's 15 love. It's a super simple game. I'm going to throw 15 questions at you, Dominika, and you just respond as quickly as you can with the first thing that pops into your brain.
Okay.
You ready?
Okay.
Palme, here we go. Number one, name the first professional match you remember watching live or on television.
Phew. I think it was like a million years ago. I think it was Kournikova playing Serena or Venus Williams. Not sure. I don't know where was it, but I think it was Kournikova and Williams playing.
Oh, I'm understanding the glamour now, the glamour part of this. You know, you got Kournikova as your first match as inspiration. I love this. All right. I have a full understanding now. Number two, Dominika, you're a new mom. I wondered what your thoughts are if Jakub wanted to play pro tennis one day.
I mean, if he would like to do it, of course, I support him, but that would not be my first choice for him.
I know Matush knows as well, but you have this amazing place for him to train. I mean, you opened your own tennis academy in Bratislava.
Yes.
Love for tennis, Dominika Cibulkova Tennis Academy. It's a world-class facility. Tons of players there. He would be good company.
Yes, he would. But it was about that I know how much it takes. And it's the sport is individual sport. So you feel alone, even if you have your team and everything. But on the court, you're alone. And this was something that I had to learn how to work with it, you know, because sometimes I felt really, really alone on the court. So actually, when I was reading Agassi's book, he was talking about the same thing, you know, he was traveling with a lot of people, but on the court, he felt like alone, you know, it was all the heavy part was on him. So this was something, I mean, really tough that I think not a lot of people would understand.
No, for sure. We're going to talk about in a minute about your book as well. You were very vulnerable in your own book and talking about a lot of those insecurities. Have you thought about coaching one day, though? If you have your own tennis academy, is that something that's in your blood, you think, maybe down the road?
Yes, I go quite often to my academy to watch some players. So I never saw myself as a coach. And I'm not saying I'm a coach. No, that's not for sure. But when I go there and I see kids, you know, I was really surprised with myself that I could really see, you know, what is happening on the court and I could really give them good advice. And I think you have to have it in you, you know, to just know how to help the player or how to give the advice, because it doesn't mean if you have been a good player that you will be a good coach.
100%. We see that all the time. Speaking of your son, Domi, when it comes time to explain to him how great of a player you were, I wondered, what's one match from your career that you'll show him on YouTube?
That will be the one I played against Agnieszka Radwanska at Wimbledon. I think it was fourth round. Yes, it was fourth round. And that match
epic.
Was, it was
the 9-7 match. Yeah.
Yes. It was epic match. And I will never forget it. My coach after that match told me like, Domi, if you never win ever again in your career anything, this match was like, you know, you will show it to your kids. And I'm like, okay. And he was right, actually.
There was that 2009 French Open match against Sharapova, which we'll talk about as well. Yeah. I mean, we have so many matches to talk about today. This is fun. Real quick, was there ever a match, I wondered, you didn't miss in that Sharapova match. Was there ever a match where you were on court and you felt like you didn't miss?
Yes, it was in Montreal or in Toronto. I think it was Montreal and I played Dementieva. I think it was 2008. I don't want to lie. I don't know if, yes, 2008, because there was Olympic Games. That year she won Olympic Games. And in Montreal, we played night match. And was, I think, second time I played against Dementieva. She was kind of a role model for me. So when I came on a court, I was playing amazing, unbelievable. And I remember screaming her on her boyfriend, like, I cannot do anything, because I couldn't understand her, you know. But, you know, but usually my emotions during the match were really pretty, you know, high. And I had to work with them. But during this match, I felt like a machine, you know. I was just playing and going. And I think I have beat her like 6-3, 6-2 or 6-2, 6-1. But it was amazing.
Yeah.
Until this day, I don't, you know, I'm like, okay, this was a great match.
So focused. Yeah. Oh, so fun. All right. Number four, if elevator selfies had a world ranking, Dominika would surely be number one in the world. I was hoping you could help me with some advice on how to take a good selfie.
You know, the selfie is fine, but the elevator, you know, everybody's like, why are you all the time at the elevator? But, you know, it started with a good light, and you know what good light can do. So it was a good light, a good mirror.
It's
and
a
then
thing.
It became,
we love it. I can't
it
wait.
It became popular. Yeah, it became popular. And I just kind of, you know, I just like it. There is a good light and it looks good. So why not?
I'm taking a selfie right now. I'm going to attempt it. Here we go, guys. Let's do this. Let's see. I'll post it later. And yeah, look at, of course, she's gorgeous. Here we go. Do you follow players on Instagram? Because your Instagram is like a rock star Instagram. Is it? Is there anybody who you follow and say, okay, that's a good one? Camilla Giorgi, do you follow her?
No, I don't. But I do follow, I follow Karolina Pliskova. I follow Maria Sakkari. Mladenovic. I follow a lot of players.
Some good ones, yeah.
I follow a lot of players.
Tons, a million. All right, good. A million of them. Number five, what's the first word that pops into your head when I say the word Lina?
Australian Open. Australian Open, of course. And then a year 2014. I think she has beaten me a finals of Australian Open. She has beaten me quarterfinals, Indian Wells, and she has beaten me Miami semifinals. And
so many matches.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You're like, enough. Enough of you. Thank you.
Even only that year was three important matches, and she has beaten me in all of them. So yes, but she's very, very nice girl. I really like her.
I loved reading that you went to Wuhan and you filmed her movie a couple years ago.
Yes.
We're waiting for it to come out. When's it coming out?
Yes, can you believe that? I'm also waiting for it to come out, but I think the COVID situation postponed it. So I can't wait to see it, because we were shooting that for 2-3 days. Actually, I was during my holidays in Maldives, and they called my agent to ask me if I can come to Wuhan for 3 days to shoot the movie. And I was like, is this for real happening? They want me to come to Wuhan to shoot the movie? I'm like, okay,
sure, right?
I
did have your friend Marianne Bartoli on the show this past week, and she announced that she's in development to do her own movie as well. So we're thinking you should be in her movie, and you just keep going.
I'm in. Marianne, call me. I'm in.
Number six, as a player that had some amazing Grand Slam success in her career, Dominika knows all about pressure. So since we're in the middle of a Grand Slam, an event that I know has a lot of memories for you since it was the site of your last tournament, I wondered, who would be your pick to win a Grand Slam this year?
What would be my pick?
Yeah.
It's hard to say.
Always hard.
I mean, even now, I think it's harder with the COVID tournaments, COVID situations. It's so unpredictable for me. So I can...
Maybe you retired at the right time. You know, it's, you know, you missed all of this COVID madness. I mean, you got to enjoy it.
Actually, it was so many players wrote me and told me, did you knew about the COVID? Like, is it normal that you left? Like,
Dominika Sivakova is psychic, everyone. This is the big announcement on the...
Is it normal that you retired? You have a family, you have a baby, and actually you didn't miss a lot? I'm like, yeah. So I was pretty lucky about it. Yeah.
We know you're retired now, but we still have hope that maybe one day you're going to come back to the court. Who knows? Fingers crossed. But maybe you'll play a Legends match one day, someday in the future.
Yes.
If so, which retired player would you want to play with?
I think the Legends, you will see me to play for sure. I'm really looking forward to it. So this is something I can tell you 100% that I want to do it, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Maybe Dementieva, Bartoli. Oh, yes. You have a lot of friends. You know, a lot of options for you.
Elena, she's she's always very, very nice girl. And I don't know who. I mean, all the retired tennis players, they are really, really nice, and we know each other pretty well. So I don't know, even Yankovic, whoever, I don't know, you know.
Oh, yes, Yankovic, Safarova, let's do it. This is fun. Let's just have your own league. Maybe this is your next job.
I can even think of Dinara Safina, you know, we are in touch. So, yes,
oh,
you know.
Safina, I love Dinara.
All the old group, you know, would be great.
Let's do a whole tour. Yes, let's just go. Yes. Now I'm ready.
Actually, I miss the good old days.
Well, one day, who knows? I'd love to know a little bit more about your style on court. So I'm going to ask Matush, actually, this one, as one of your biggest fans. Matush, how would you describe Dominika's playing style to someone that's never seen her play tennis?
The best one. Yeah, I really like her stubbornness on court. Even she was down, she was still trying to go, going for it. She pushed her opponents, and that was really amazing. Even if she's small, she's so big, because her serve was also really good. And everyone was telling she's too small. She never can do anything. And she was the number four.
Thank you.
As someone who's vertically challenged myself, I do appreciate your playing style very much. You know, I'm a short guy. So I always watched you. I was like, yes, let's do this. Let's move around the court.
One thought came across my mind when you were talking about kind of my stubbornness, but it was... I remember, you know, even me, I had to push myself, of course, like thousands of times to be fighting back, you know, because it's not easy, you know, when you're losing, it's not easy to, you know, to be all the time like positive and, oh my God, I'm going to do this. You know, sometimes, of course, everybody has these negative thoughts. And I remember I was in the locker room, and there was my match going. I mean, they were playing it on TV. And next to me, Martina Hingis, she was standing next to me. And I missed like I think I missed the forehand like 2 meters from the net. You know, something totally stupid I did. And she was standing next to me and she said, this is no problem for you. It doesn't matter what you do on the court. You can miss a point like this, but you go. You forget me. I would die on the court, you know, from, you know, she said, like, I don't know how to explain, you know, but she said, you can do anything stupid on the court, but in the next moment, you forget about it and you just go, you go. So I don't know, you know, so this was also kind of.
Yeah, this is what you did throughout your entire career. And I can't wait to talk about it. Number 9, let's go from Dami's playing style to her fashion style. Anyone that follows Dominika on Instagram knows that she is the ultimate fashionista.
Yeah.
So Dami, how would you describe your own personal style?
It's changing, but it's for sure a little bit. It's not minimalistic for sure.
Yes.
So
yes.
Sometimes I feel like, you know, want to add extra sparkle or less sparkle, but there is always some sparkle, and there are always some designer brands and good shoes and. Nice handbags. So yeah,
there we go. A lot is okay, and that's the rule, you
yes,
know
yes exactly
you work hard for it.
More is more.
You had your own fashion brand too, and you know what, I was still looking for that Palme baseball cap one day. You know, I'm gonna find it. It's they're all sold out everywhere. You can't find them anymore.
Yeah,
I was looking
everywhere.
I will send you one. Oh man. All right, number 10. Only tennis players can really appreciate the love that Dominika had for smelling a fresh can of tennis balls.
Yes.
So it got me wondering, what other superstitions did you have during your playing days?
There were many, but it came to a certain point that I had to stop a lot of them because it wasn't comfortable anymore. And I was just doing it and it was not good for me anymore. So the one I was doing that I always had to give the towel to,
yeah,
to the only ball boy on one side, not to the other one. And sometimes when I did, I was like, okay, when I give it to the other ball boy and then I lose a point, I was like, I knew it. So I knew it. Why did I do it?
Now you can't put it to the ball boys. You
exactly.
Have to,
yeah, you would have done well. Yeah, you would have done well now. Only tennis players listening know exactly. They're all like, oh, yes. Yeah, no, for sure. That's so funny. Dummy, besides your 2014 Australian Open final, you get one singles loss from your career to turn into a win instead. Which do you pick?
Which I pick in except the Australian Open finals?
Any loss from your career?
Ooh, this is a tough question. You see, actually, like in this moment, I can think of one like right away. But you know which one? The one I played quarterfinals at Wimbledon. I was playing really, really good that year. It was 2018. And I lost to Elena Ostapenko. I knew I could do more. I was a little bit not focused. I was a little bit out of energy. And I think I could do better. Because I was playing so, so good. And I think I could do better than quarters or semifinals there.
Describe yourself off court in just one word.
Loud. Yeah, loud.
Really?
Yeah, and I love to laugh, you know. I love to have a good time. I love to go out with my friends and just to, you know, just to laugh, you know. I love just hanging out and to have a good time.
Personality's big, the clothes are big, the forehand's big, you know, it's just loud.
Yeah.
Last one, Dominika, you had such an amazing career. What do you hope that your fans will remember you for?
Of course, for that I was one of the best tennis players in the world. This is the most important for me. Yeah.
You have a legacy in Slovakia. You have a legacy all over the world, especially for vertically challenged people like me. So you aced that. Well done. That's so fun. Matush, this is fun, right? Are we having a good time? This is amazing today.
Yeah, of course. I'm still smiling.
I hate to break up this fun fest, but we have to get to know a little bit more about Dominika's career. So, hey, fantastic fans. I'm sure you're just like me and can't wait to get out and play some tennis this summer. I just read a study released this year. 4 million more people have played tennis last year than the year before. Take that, pandemic. That's a lot of new faces on the courts, and the U.S. Tennis Association of New England wants to celebrate those people in a big way. If you're listening out there and love seeing our fantastic sport grow, join the USTA New England in their I Am a Tennis Player campaign all summer long. The goal is to show that anyone can pick up a racket and hit the courts. When you're out playing this summer, please post your photos on social media and use the hashtag IAmATennisPlayer. Let's see if we can bring some more people into our great sport together. I'd love to play a game called I 40 Love You. It's going to be Matush versus Dominika and a fan versus favorite tennis match trivia showdown all about Dominika's career and life. Matush, I'm going to ask you a question about Dami's career. And then Dami, I'm going to ask you two questions that test your own memory about your own career.
Okay.
If we happen to end up in a 2-2 tie, I'm going to give Matush the opportunity right now to be today's champ, but only if he can survive this first question. Otherwise, the tiebreak goes to Dominika. This game is called True or False. This is an early test of your fandom to Team Palme, Matush. So good luck to you. I'm going to read you a statement about Dominika. If the statement is true, you just say true. If the statement is not correct, please firmly say fault in your best Wimbledon linesperson's voice. If you get this right, you'll win the tiebreak. So here we go. True or fault? I mentioned earlier Dominika's amazing autobiography entitled Tennis de Moj de Vot, Tennis is My Life. But that was not the original title of the book. Dominika wanted the book to be called Palme Domi, but it was later changed by the publishing company. Is that true or fault?
Yeah, I guess it's true.
What a great title to that. That would have been another great title to
that
book.
No, but it's not true.
It's not true. It's not true. I made that up. But congrats, Dominika. Your book, I mean, did so well. It's so amazing.
I still hope to be translated in English because I have a lot of fans asking me for it. So we are still working on it. And I hope one day it will be translated in English. I would love to. I would love that.
Yeah, because I had to Google translate it. That's not as fun, but still, you know, a fantastic book. You know, when Jacob gets a little older and he can start reading, you can just say, go read mommy's book if you want to learn about her career. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
It's not bad. Yes. Yes.
What would you say was something from the book that your fans responded to the most?
I think they were surprised by my honesty, and they were surprised by how open I was in the book, because usually in the press and on the social media, I'm not that kind of person who goes out and talk about my real emotions and my problems, and you know, everybody sometimes is going through tough times. So I'm actually the one who is keeping it for myself. And even, you know, people say that I post a lot of on social media and they can see a lot of from my life, but that's actually only what I choose them to see, you know. So it's not something really how I am, you know. I mean, of course, I'm not pretending nothing on the social media, but it's not like what, you know, what I do every day, what I deal with every day. So I'm not that open kind of person. And in my book, you know, they were really surprised that they get to know a different Domi, you know, the real one. So I think they were really surprised by this.
You had to, obviously, if you're going to sit down and write a memoir, you have to be very open. Like you said, you know, you must have been very cognizant to say, okay, I'm going to show people all different sides of me at this point. Was it strange writing the book and putting that in paper? Once you read it, you're like, wow, am I going to really do this? Like, this is tough.
It was really harsh. Some parts were like, I was thinking a lot about if I put it in the book or not, because some of things were really, really personal. The part that when I wanted to retire, you know, that part is really, really hard. Yeah, you know.
Because you felt like you were letting your fans down if you told them that.
No, or that I just felt like I don't want to be so vulnerable. I don't know if this is the word is right.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to be so vulnerable to so many people who can read this, you know, because this can read not only your fans, you know, but anybody, you know. So, and this is what I don't do, and I don't like to show myself that something can hurt me, you know, and stuff like that. So this was, I was like, to go for it or not, because it was really, really personal, and it was something that nobody knew about me, only my closest people. So yes, I was thinking a lot about this, and I was actually, we were writing the book with the writer, we were doing it for 1.5 years actually, and it was a long process. So it was, it took a lot of time, and I put a lot of energy into this book.
Well, it's a great book. I highly encourage everyone to go and read it. I mean, even the English Google translation was super, super fun to read. You can get it anywhere you get your favorite books. So I encourage you to do that. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about your career in a second. There were so many things you covered in the autobiography. So let's go back to when you were a kid and when we first started playing tennis. We're going to start our game now. Dominika is going to start us off with your first question today. Domi, you would begin playing ITF events full time in 2005. And by 2007, you would win the first of 4 career victories over this future number one and Grand Slam champion. So your first question is, which future number one did you defeat in 2007 for the very first time?
I don't know. I don't remember. I don't know.
Sometimes people remember, sometimes they don't. She's having a baby girl, so maybe Jakob can play mixed with her somewhere down the line.
Wozniacki,
yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Okay. I was thinking either if it's Wozniacki or Azarenka, so I was only thinking of these two girls.
You had such a great junior career, Dominika, getting all the way to 3 in the world in the ITF rankings. You played juniors with an amazing generation of players, with Azarenka and Wozniacki and Baczynski.
Radwanska
too. So many memories, I'm sure. How did you start playing tennis? How did you get a racket into your hand for the first time?
My dad, he was an athlete. So he teach me so many sports. Like he teach me how to swim, how to ski, water skiing. And so my parents, they were like, okay, so she likes a sport. So let's her do swimming or gymnastics. And I tried all of them, and actually any of the sports was like, okay, I want to do it, or I like it. It was like, okay, it's so what else are we going to do? And, you know, and then one day, one of the friends of my parents, he was like, he's doing like a tennis camp in our city, actually in the place where we're living, and he asked me if I want to come. And my parents are, okay, so Domi can try tennis, whatever. So this is how it started, just by friend of my parents, and he asked them if I want to join the camp. Yeah, that was it.
I read by 10 years old, you had already moved to Bratislava to focus on tennis.
Yes.
Do you remember how early on it was that you said, okay, I want to be a professional tennis player. I want to try this. Like I'm good at this.
Like it was a little bit tougher because as you know, everybody was saying, no, I'm too small and I will never make it. So it wasn't like, you know, okay, I want to do it. And, you know, because everybody was like this, a lot of coaches were like, no, I mean, there is no potential. She cannot play professional tennis. So it was actually, we felt like it's just me and my parents against the world, you know? So then we had to find a proper coach who would say, okay, that he believes in me and he thinks I can do it. So I remember when I was 10 years old, we were actually, because Bratislava and Piešťany is like, I don't know, 15 minutes by car driving. And for 1 year, we were driving every morning there and back with my dad to practice in Bratislava. And then one day my parents said like, okay, this is not good for me. You know, I need to rest and stuff like that. So we bought a first apartment in Bratislava. So this is how it, you know, slowly started. You know, then we moved with my father to Bratislava and I started to practice every day. We started living here and it was, you know, step by step. So it wasn't like one day we said like, okay, you're going to do it, but it, you know, small little details came together and that's...
And poof, there we go. Here we are, top four in the world. You mentioned the height. I wanted to ask this question because it's really important to the structure of your career and your backstory. You can't fix height. You can fix a serve. You can fix a forehand, but it's something you had to deal with your entire career. You became one of the shortest players since Amanda Kutzer to enter the top five in the world.
Yes.
We know there's disadvantages of being, you know, of height and short, but did you ever feel there were advantages to being a short player?
Yeah, of course. Of course, there is advantage. There is advantage if you work hard and, I mean, if you work enough on your footwork, you know, but that's also something you have to have a talent for, because not just to be short, it will not help you a lot. So you need to have a talent to be really quick, really fast. And your movement needs to be, I worked on my movements since I was 10 years old. I remember my father, he always picked a coaches for me, and he picked a very good one for my physical trainer at that time. So I was, I think, the only 10 years old in Bratislava who had like a tennis coach and a physical coach, and everybody was looking at us like, are they crazy? What are they doing? And so my father was kind of like an innovator in this. I remember a lot of times happened to him that some parents of other tennis players came to him and was like, you think, is this good for her? Like, why are you doing this? Isn't it over-motivated? And my father was like all the time, just let me be, you know?
Just watch.
Yeah, like, you know, kind of.
Obviously, Domi, you were such a great junior player. You'd finished 2006, 156 in the world. You were winning ITF events. And by 2008, you would crack the top 20 and get 5 victories against players in the top 5, which is amazing. 2008 would also be the very first top 10 win of your career over Venus Williams in Doha.
Oh, yeah.
That was a big win for you. Yes. What was that like?
Yes, of course. I remember. And it was, I think, for the first time when they were trying this on-court coaching. You know, I was young. I was like 18 years old and always funny and crazy. And I remember this match that my coach, he came on a court and he wanted to tell me some tactics because he saw like I'm playing well and I'm playing, you know, I can beat Venus Williams. And he came on the court talking to me tactics. And I was like, and I touched his microphone. Like, is this really working? Like, hello, hello. Can you all hear me? And he was like, are you serious? Please focus. Okay. Sorry. So, yeah, there are some situations that I remember, but, yeah, it was the, when I was going on this match, my coach told me like, you know, you can beat Venus Williams because this is something different. You know, I was always underestimated player, you know, a short player from Slovakia, you know, and the mentality, like, American mentality and Slovakian mentality is very, very different. So we are not used to that when you are growing up, you are not used to like you will be number one or you will be top 10. You know, this mentality is here. Like I hope we get to 100 in the world, you know? So when you go for the first time play against Venus Williams, you are like, is this real? Can I go on a court, on the same court against her, you know? And you end up beating her. So, what a moment, right? Yes. So there were actually a lot of moments like this. Even I remember when I was going on a playing quarterfinals 2009, I was going on a match against Sharapova. I was never arguing with my coach because what my coach said, I was always very a good student. I was always doing it because I was believing in my coach. And so before the match against Sharapova, you know, I was in the quarterfinals. I was like, wow, can I do something more in my life than this? Or like, you know, this is like, I never even dream of. And my coach before the match, he was like, okay, Domi, you can beat Sharapova. You have the ability, you have to do this. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Like, this is enough for me. And my coach, he started to be really, really rough on me. And he told me not the nice words, but he wanted me to kind of like, to really believe it, you know, that I can go on a court and to go on with the mentality that I can beat her. And I remember I was crying before this match, you know, I didn't understand what he wants from me. Like, I'm playing quarterfinals and he's screaming at me. And actually, this was the best thing he could do because it really gave me like, okay, so I can really beat her. Okay, I can do it. Because if he would tell me just like this, okay, you can beat her, do this. And I would be, no, I would not believe it, you know? So he had to really scream on me. I had to do some crying and then I understood.
We're talking about your amazing semifinal run to the French Open in 2009. You just mentioned you beat 5 great players to make that semifinal, losing to an almost unstoppable Dinara Safina in that semifinal. We just talked about Sharapova. What a great match. I think, like you said, you were leading 6-love, 5-love. You were playing unbelievable tennis.
40-30, yes.
Crazy. What a crazy match. Yes. I mean, that is amazing. What did that semifinal mean to you at that point in your career? You were still young. You were getting your first big matches under your belt. And now you're in the Grand Slam semifinal. All eyes are on you now.
Yes.
What was that like afterwards?
It was a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure on somebody who I never saw myself in such a position, you know, to play semifinal of the Grand Slam. I never even before a dream of it, you know. So there is a lot of things I had to go through. I had to mentally, you know, just like kind of soak up, you know, and I had to get used to some things, you know. And after, when I was older, of course, this is also one of the matches that I would change if I could, because when I was walking on semifinal against Dinara Safina, there was the point where I didn't see myself doing better or even going for the finals. You know, mentally, I wasn't there. I wasn't ready. So I had to, all my career, I had to really work hard on my mental, with my mental coach, you know. Then, you know, he was about my confidence. We had to work on my confidence. We had to work on my expectations for myself, that I can have bigger expectations for myself. Because, and this is, you know, this is, I think, from how you are when you are growing up, you know, how is the people around you. And, you know, because if you are growing up in with people who tell you like, okay, you will be number 10 in the world and you will be beating the best players, and you are growing up with this mentality, when you get to the point, then you are not so surprised, you know?
Yeah.
But when it's the opposite, then, you know, it's, you have to give like extra hard work on this, you know?
I mean, maybe the confidence wasn't there yet, but the results were coming after that semifinal. In 2011, you'd get back into the top 20. You were still missing your first title, but at the very last event of your 2011 season, you would do it in style, becoming the first player to ever win the Kremlin Cup as their very first WTA title. You battled Kaya Kanepi 7-5 in the third to win that title. That is a huge, huge title. How good did it feel to finally win your first WTA title at that moment?
It was, I think you could hear the stone falling from my heart, because it was, you know, before the match, I had Croatian tennis coach. He was really, really tough. And he wasn't there that week. And I remember I was judges with my boyfriend, my husband now, and my fitness coach. And I remember calling to my tennis coach before the match. And I needed some comfort before the final, because I think it was like fifth or sixth final that I didn't make, or I don't remember. And I was like, will I ever win a WTA tournament? You know, it was so, so important to me. And I was like, okay, what if I will be the only player who will not win a WTA, you know, tournament? And I was calling to my coach and I was asking him, like, you know, I needed some comfort. So I was so nervous. And I was like, I called him like, you know, if I don't win, then what? Then there will be another final and I can try another final. So I just need to relax. And he told me, no, you have to win this one. I mean, this is your like sixth final. So well, how long do you want to wait? I'm like,
well. So I love how straightforward this man is to
yes,
you. I love
exactly. Yeah. All my coaches, they were like straightforward. All my career. So, and it was good for something because it always got me on the edge, and on the edge, I was always able to give even more for myself.
Well, 2009, your first Grand Slam semifinal. 2011, your first WTA title. Let's go to Matusha's first question. We're going to talk about 2014, this amazing Australian Open. Dominika would defy the odds and go on to make her first Grand Slam final at the 2014 Australian Open. Her road to that final was quite impressive, as she would defeat five players that were regulars in the world's top 10. So Matush, here's your question. One huge win in particular during her run to the final would prove to be a familiar opponent for Dominika, as their matchups would almost always come at important moments in Dami's career. Which player did Dominika beat during that Australian Open that she also played in her first quarterfinal at the French, her first quarterfinal at Wimbledon, as well as her very first WTA final?
Ooh.
I love that, Dami. Your memory is like it's not something like you just don't worry about things like that, right? It's not like I have a terrible memory. I can't remember anything I did.
No,
even this
I have actually a good memory, but this one
and do you remember
remind me, I was playing what round?
Well, you played her in your first quarterfinal at the French. You played her in your first quarterfinal at Wimbledon. Okay, all right. Okay. Now we got. Now Dami got.
Of course,
Dami
I
has
know.
It.
I know. Of course, I know.
Quarters. It was Maria Sharapova.
It was yes, Maria Sharapova. So interesting. You.
Yeah, you have to repeat the questions, and then it came to my mind.
Yes.
Dami, Maria was always. It seemed like she was on your side of the draw. What was it about that matchup in particular with Maria that brought out such great tennis in you?
Certainly the talk before the match with my coach, it actually really, really helped. And I think my game was just really good on the clay in 2009, because it was, I think 2011 was the last time when I had good result on the clay, right? Is it? So I think my game was changing throughout the years. And this was the only last two solid years I had good ones on the clay. So it was important that for me, the most important was that I believed in myself that I can beat her. So it's not just a cliche, you know, you can hear this a lot, but this was for me in my career when I was going on a court and I believed in myself and I knew, okay, I can win this. And I really, really believed in I could do big things.
You had, after that amazing Sharapova match, your confidence was high. You'd go on to beat Halep in her first Grand Slam quarterfinal, and then Radwanska 3-2. What were your emotions like winning that semifinal in Australia, getting to your first Grand Slam final? I mean, let's take me back there.
No,
what were those feelings?
I can't explain it. It cannot be explained. I have never experienced such a joy, you know. Of course, now I have a baby and it's different joy. So this was like, you know, you work for something your whole life and you put in everything and it's just here, you know, it's happening. And I remember before first round of this Australian Open, before the first day, I was playing Francesca Schiavone in the first round. Before the first day, I had practice with my coach. And he was giving me such a hard time. And he was...
Well, we know now. Yeah, that fits the bill.
Yeah, he exactly. He was really, really bad to me. And there was another crying on the court after practice. I was like, I felt really terrible. But then something clicked. And it was just there, you know, always hard, always tough times, always made me stronger. So this is what I learned.
The first Slovakian woman to make a Grand Slam final, fantastický for sure.
Yes.
Was Lina just a very big, tough matchup for you in your career? Was that, obviously we talked yes, a little bit about was, her. Yes. Was that just?
Yes. In my career, as you can see, I always had to go through the situations, like for the first time playing semifinals at Roland Garros, and then to play another semifinals of the Grand Slam, I always had to be in the situation before and kind of not do good, and then I could do better for the next time.
Yeah.
So this was the same why I won, I think why I won Masters and why I beat Kerber in the final, because I exactly remembered my final match against Lina and I knew that this one I can make.
Your progress in your career, like I said, 2014, get to the final, but we're not done yet. Let's get to 2016 because your career just kept getting better. Let's go to your last question, Dominika. This question will test your memory. One of the most memorable matches of your career was that 2016 fourth round match against Aga Radwanska that we talked about earlier, winning 9-7 in the third to make the second of three quarterfinal appearances at Wimbledon. I'll make this one simple. This could be a little tough. How many times did you beat Aga Radwanska in your career?
I don't know how many times. I think it's like, is it like six, four?
Yeah, six times. There you go. Good for you. One, you get the point. Yes.
Really?
Six times. Yeah, you beat her six times.
And
crazy.
She beat me and she has beaten me?
We won't mention that.
Okay.
We won't, I don't remember.
Okay.
Let's talk about your 2016 Monster season. Dami, four titles in 2016, including Eastbourne. That must have been very proud. Obviously, that tournament has legendary names that have won that tournament.
Yes.
I would say your grass court season was really the highlight of 2016, but it was really that title in Linz that set up your appearance in Singapore.
Exactly.
How much pressure did you feel at Linz?
Yes. As I said, I think I played my best tennis. Of course, I had to be in a good form. When I was in a good form, I played my best tennis when I was under biggest pressure. Let's say when I, 2015, I played a quarterfinal of, I was defending finalist of the Australian Open. And the stress I felt and the pressure I felt before the first round of Australian Open 2015, I can't explain. And I actually did quarterfinals in 2015, and it was another example of that I was under extreme pressure and I could deal with it, but I had to be in a good form. And this was the same in Linz. You know, for me, the only chance to get on a Masters after a brilliant year was to win Linz, you know, and I was never kind of a player who is coming with this mentality to a tournament. So I had all of my friends, my full team there. And this mentality was I remember the first day in Linz and I was like, okay, this is the only thing how I can get to the Masters is to win this. Okay, I'm going to win this tournament. And I played Bencic, I played Suarez, Navarro, and I don't remember all of the great players. And I was like, this is the only one.
You win Linz and you get to fly right to Singapore right away.
Yes.
You know, you're just in time for that iconic photo shoot that everyone loves to see, right?
Yes.
You're right there. It's amazing. You start your tournament.
I had my Versace dress on me, I remember.
You start against Kerber, you lose, but you ended against Kerber, and it's one of the greatest moments of your career for sure. A lot happened to you in that run. Please take us back to that.
Yes. So, this is what I talked about, the pressure. And I remember I lost first two matches, and the only chance how to get out of the group was to go on a court and beat Halep in two sets. If I beat her in three sets, bye, Domi, bye. So I was like, okay, I go on a court. And the only thought I had to beat her in two sets. I have to beat her in two sets. And so I was playing amazingly well the first set. And then second set, it started to be more tough. And I remember we went into the tiebreaker, or it was maybe 6-5 for her, and it was 30 love. And the thought came to my mind, like this can be over. So you have to give everything what you have just to win this, you know? And this kind of pressure didn't make me feel weak, but it gave me, you know, like wings, you know? So I felt like I was like a tiger on the court, even in the during the tie break. I remember I didn't have any Hawkeye, and then I think I killed one forehand and they called out that I didn't have Hawkeye. So I was like, this is happening for a reason, but I'm strong. I'm going to win this no matter what. So, you know, so this was another situation under extreme pressure. I remember that made me play even better than I can.
You're playing in the final. Obviously, you get all the way, all the pressure you just talked about, getting all the way to the final. It's a huge final for you. You'd already played in the Australian Open final. You played in the French Open semifinals. Was this final just like exciting that you had fought so much? I mean, there wasn't the pressure we felt like watching this match. More joy.
Yes. It was more joy. Yes, this final, it was about me going on the court and knowing that I'm going to win this match. There was no doubting. There was nothing. I knew I have form of my life, and that I have beaten Kerber before, and I knew what I have to do to beat her. So I lost.
Which is crazy to say that, because you play her in the first round and you're just coming a few days earlier and she had beaten you. So yes, to turn that around.
Yes, yes, yes. And I knew what mistakes I did. There was only few mistakes during a very great first match we had. And I remember it like even today. So with my coach, it was, I don't know, 15 minute talk about tactique. And I had some, I saw also some, we watched some videos together of the first match we had. And he said, okay, this is the thing you have to do different. This is the thing you have to do different, and you're going to win it. I'm like, okay. And that was the only thought I was going on the court with. And you could see what the result was. You know, I was just flying on the court. I was like crazy. An animal there. I was like an animal. I felt like unbeatable.
When you laid down on the court with that tournament after that final point,
there was something like I can explain. You know, it's something. Yes. It was the first negative thought came to my mind during that match when I had my first match point. I actually even now can feel how my leg started to shake. You know, I lost it. I completely lost it. I was like, what do I do now? You know, like, what should I do now? Like, I missed such a friend. And then I'm like, okay, I'm done. I cannot move. So this I will never forget for the rest of my life. And I managed to get out of this situation, and to finish this match was actually, this was the hardest thing in my life I had to do.
I'm sure. Even pregnancy. Look at that. Done.
Yes, exactly. Done, huh? Yeah. So.
Wow. What that tournament is so iconic. It absolutely amazing. Obviously something you're going to remember for the rest of your life.
Of course.
Wait.
It's yeah.
We're wrapping up today with Dominika Cibulková, and I want to get to just the end of her career. Obviously it's been an iconic run so far. Let's go to our last question. Matush, this one's for you, and this is for the win for you. Dominika would surprise the tennis world and announce that she'd be retiring at the 2019 French Open. Her very last match on tour would be a doubles match alongside this former number one doubles player that would also be playing in her very last tournament of her career at the same event. Which former French Open champion did Cibulková team up with for her last match at the 2019 French Open?
Easy.
I am not sure. I wasn't focusing so much on your doubles, Domi.
Of course, me neither. Don't worry.
You are a speaker player.
So
I just can. It was Lucy Shafarova.
Yes, it was.
Dominika, you absolutely shocked the tennis world. Good for you for doing that.
Thank you.
You pulled. You know, that's a good way to go out. I know you had the reoccurring Achilles problem as well throughout your career. Also, I think you had announced your pregnancy. I'm not sure of the timing at that point anyway, but how long had you planned the retirement at that point? Was it something you thought about that last kind of year, I guess?
Yes. It was, I had it in my mind for a little bit longer time, but 2018, I was already thinking about it seriously. And then 2019, my coach knew about it, my team, they all knew about it. And I wanted to keep it for myself just to not let the public no, because I wanted to, you know, it's different if you only think of something than when you speak of something and then when you're actually going to do it. So we were like, okay, Roland Garros is my last tournament, but I want to keep it for myself. And then if I, after a few months, I still feel like this was the right thing to do, then I'm going to announce it. So yeah. Roland Garros was the last one. And then in September, I announced, I was launching my book and I announced my retirement. So it took me 2-3 months, 3 to 4 months, just enjoying life, just traveling and just, you know, just to be okay
transitioning
with it. Yes, yeah. Just to be okay with it that I really want to quit.
What were the emotions like that last match? I mean, that obviously we're in the middle of the French Open right now. I'm sure you're watching it and you're like, oh gosh, I mean, the feelings are coming back. The last time you're on the court and that doubles match with Lucy or even singles, what was it like knowing that was it?
Yeah, the singles wasn't nice. The singles wasn't nice. I wasn't there anymore mentally. I was just really, really tired of everything, of traveling, of training. And, you know, it was many years I was doing it and I just felt tired. I was not enjoying it anymore. There was no motivation. There was no joy. So my coach saw it, my team saw it, and they knew that I had to put my heart in, you know, to be playing my best tennis. So,
but you went out the way you wanted to, you know, you said, this is my last tournament. This is what's going to happen. And,
exactly,
and you did it on your own terms.
Exactly. So yes, the last match, I don't even remember because it was, I mean, I remember that it wasn't a good match, but it didn't mean a lot to me, you know?
I think your last matches were Sabalenka and Osaka. So I think you did okay. It wasn't like,
yes, of course. It was not like, you know, losing to, yes.
Yeah. To me, right?
It's not like, like to you, yes.
Dummy, you spoke in your book about all the hard work you did to make it as far as you did. Looking back in your career, is there anything you would have maybe changed or wish was maybe a little bit different?
As I said, maybe during the growing up as a player, maybe I would say to my parents to more believe in me or to give me, you know, this winning thoughts in my head, you know, more so that I could, you know, not be so surprised after some wins, you know, and so I could have this mentality, this, I call it American mentality. So I could have a bit more of it.
Yeah. Well, Dominika, you are loved all over the world and your fight you displayed on court and how you were able to do it is just amazing. Your tennis and your game will be used as an example for thousands of players to
come.
Thank you
very much.
You should be very proud of yourself. I want to thank my guests for joining us today. We learned so much. You can find Matouche on Instagram at matouche.mazec. Thank you so much, Matouche. You can follow our superstar mom on Instagram at Domi Sibulkova or on Twitter at Sibulkova. You can also check out the Dominika Sibulkova Tennis Academy at loveforTennis.com. I can't thank you enough, Domi. Pome,
yes,
thank you so much.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you. While you're on Instagram, shoot me a DM at John Garica. Let me know who you're a big fan of and who you'd like to see on an upcoming show. Also, don't forget to follow us at Fantastic Tennis Pod or Twitter at FanTennisPod. My name is John Garica, and thank you for listening. This has been fantastic.